The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
We have a brand new investor joining us on the podcast today. Joining us from Champaign, Illinois is Jerry Ellis. Jerry recently bought his first rental, so I want to kind of break everything down today, talk about how he found the property, what he had to do to it to get it ready, and how he found his first tenants. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 60 seconds and we'll meet Jerry.
Are you looking for a roadmap to financial freedom? If so, we have a solution for you. Narada Real Estate is offering a limited number of free strategy sessions to help you get out of the rat race. Learn how you can create wealth and build monthly passive income. To set up a time with one of our knowledgeable investment counselors, simply go to naradarealestate.com. That's NORADA realestate.com.
Can we quench the world's thirst for clean and safe water? This is something the new podcast Waterline explores. Waterline is a new podcast created to communicate the many facets of water. If you're looking to learn and explore about economic, political, social, behavioral, technological, and environmental aspects of water around the globe, Waterline Podcast covers them all. I checked out the episode called Water Makes the World Go Round. It's a real interesting look into the water economy. If you want to check it out, just search Waterline Podcast on iTunes or in your favorite Android podcast app. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the podcast and congratulations on buying your first rental property.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So I want to kind of take a step back and kind of walk through the whole process of buying the property, fixing it up, and renting it out. So let's start at the very beginning. Take me back to when you first got the idea that you wanted to buy a rental property.
Sure. So that would have been the holiday, Christmas of 2016. And, you know, it was one of those kind of moments, epiphany moments when, you know, let me start back with when I was younger. My father taught at a university. He had purchased a house and rented that out to some college kids. And I was always intrigued with the idea of having the renters pay for that mortgage. And so during that holiday break of 2016, I was thinking about that again. And so I started doing the research to see, well, you know, is that really possible? Can I make some money doing that? And for me, it was to ultimately to supplement my retirement. And so then I started in on this research to figure out if this is viable. And I went to all the typical places that you might go on the internet to figure this out. Started listening to podcasts like yours, for example. And I was able to get a sense for the idea that, yes, you know, a person could actually buy a house and rent that out and make some money. So I started joining the local real estate groups, started going to meetings. And from there, I made a connection with a guy that had a house for sale that he had bought at the local sheriff's auction.
So it seemed like you learned from listening to the podcast and reading stuff online, and then you kind of took the next step and connected with local people at the RIA club that were actually doing it to make sure that this was really possible, what you were hearing on the podcast, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And that also includes, I visited probably half a dozen different banks to talk to them about the financing piece of that, because it just seemed a little weird to me that you could buy a house and then fix it up and refinance it and pull that money back out.
Right. Totally. Yeah. It seems kind of like magic. But yeah, I think when you connect with people that are actually doing it, it just seems more real. And especially, I mean, meeting people in your local market that are doing it. So, all right. So you connect with these people, you say, okay, well, this is real. I can really do this. what was your first step? Like, how did you first start looking for properties?
Well, you know, I started on looking on MLS just to see, you know, what these, if that's going to be an avenue for finding these. And, you know, and that was part of my verification process as well, was to look for these houses just so that I can know the market. Because, you know, an educated buyer is, you know, how else would I recognize a good deal
right,
if I didn't
sure.
know what retail was?
Right. Were you working with a realtor?
I did talk to some of them, but, you know, I just hadn't found anybody that was investor minded.
Okay.
They were all
okay.
residential folks.
Sure. Okay. So then you started, how did you get into properties? Like when you, like, so you were seeing stuff online, how did you check out the properties on the inside to see what they were like?
Well, you know, so the stuff that was on the MLS, I did actually go and look at some of these, and there was some, everything from stuff that was probably rental ready to go, or, you know, maybe some, there was a couple foreclosures that I looked at that would have needed some work. But it was ultimately the house that I found was through a connection through the local real estate group.
Awesome. Okay. So this is another investor that was selling a property that he owned?
That's correct.
Awesome.
It was one that he, it was a mortgage foreclosure that he bought at the sheriff's auction.
Okay. So he was basically flipping the house. Like he bought it, he made some money and sold it to you.
Well, yeah, I would call it more of a wholesale because he
okay.
didn't do anything
okay.
to it.
Okay. Awesome. And so you bought the property. Now, what I think is interesting is that you worked out a deal to have him kind of mentor you.
Well, yeah. So this is a guy from the local group. And you know, I had lunch with him at one point in time. And so he kind of knew what I was looking for and knew where I was at. And so when we were talking about this, the purchase of this house, as part of the deal, I said, well, so I want you to, I'll buy the house from you, but I want you to answer one question a week for me. And, you know, he kind of chuckled because he didn't really understand what I was focusing on.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, I don't have any of these contacts for contractors. I might have some just everything from process questions to, you know, I don't know, maybe I might want to ask you about the paint color on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was doing essentially was asking him to be a mentor for me for this project, but I wanted to give it a little bit of structure. So he knew I wasn't going to be like calling him up all the time and
yeah.
asking him a bunch of questions to pester him. So, and that really worked out well because he gave me two or three contacts for the contractors that I need. And just any of those little questions about what I thought the rehab was going to take and what the rent might be and the process length. That was super helpful to have that.
Sure. So tell me about the rehab. So you buy the property and I assume it needed a bunch of work.
Oh yeah. It was a total wreck.
And, okay.
It had holes in the walls. And I think the story was that, the previous owner had a child with a behavioral problem of some sort. And so there was, the drywall was trashed. The doors were either missing or broken. So we went and replaced all the doors. We did a ton of drywall patching. My intention was to save the kitchen cabinets, but we ended up pulling those out. But it got flooring and paint. And I mean, it was, I would probably call it a light remodel, but
okay.
it did need a lot of work. It looked bad.
How long did it take you to do all the work?
Well, so that's one of the lessons that I learned on this. And so the guy that I had working on it was turned out to be basically a one man show. And so he would work on it and he worked pretty steady. He's an honest guy and everything, but there was times when he would pull off and go do somebody else's short job and go back to this.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, being one guy, it really took a while for that to happen. So,
right.
You know, and if I were in a time crunch, I probably wouldn't use this guy again because, you know, he's going to take a long time. And the other part of that was, you know, he would say, okay, we're getting ready. We're going to need to do flooring. And I waited until the last minute to go acquire the flooring, just because that's just in my nature not to spend the money unless you need to. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, is that they didn't have all the flooring that I needed.
Like at Home Depot or wherever you were buying the floor from?
Right. Okay. Yeah. We did vinyl plank throughout the entire house, and they didn't have enough of what we selected. And so I had to wait for that. And so that caused a delay.
What kind of delay did that for the flooring? Like how long did it take for that material to come in?
Oh, it was almost 3 weeks.
Was it? Wow. Okay. Okay.
Right.
So
and
did
it
things
kind of the same deal on the kitchen cabinets as well?
Did things just come to a halt, like where there was nothing else he could do, so the job just kind of came to a halt for 3 weeks, or could you have him do other things in the house?
Well, I think he might have done some of the other things too, but it basically came to a halt.
Okay. Okay. Wow. All right. So you lost 3 weeks for the floors, and then the cabinets. How long did you lose for that?
It was probably a couple weeks for that.
Wow.
As well.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And so the lesson learned there is that, you know, on the next one, I'm going to stage that stuff. I'm just going to go ahead and spend the money. When I start getting closer, I'm not going to wait until he tells me that he's ready. I'm going to get it ahead of time.
Right. Okay. So, all right. So start to finish, how long was the project?
So I decided I wanted to buy a house over Christmas. We would have closed in May of that year, but there was a technicality with the sale that got the purchase put in June. So I started thinking about the process over Christmas. In June, I closed, and then it was actually ready late December.
Okay. Okay. So like 6 months for everything. So now if like for the next one, like knowing that you're going to order the materials up front, you're going to get a contractor that can get the work done with a team, and he's not going to be going to other jobs. Like how long do you think a rehab like this should take?
Well, I would expect start to finish and even the placing of a tenant. You know, I would probably go for 6 months.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That still seems like a long time for me.
I might be able to make it shorter.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay. So, all right. Let's talk about the tenant. So after you got the property fixed up, how did you go about advertising for the property?
Yeah. So it was Craigslist and Facebook.
Okay.
Pretty much.
And so you put the ads on there, and like, did you kind of experiment with different wording, or did you just describe the house, put up some pictures, and just wait for people to start contacting you?
So that included cozy.co.
Okay.
Which also puts it on like realtor.com or some of those. But essentially it was some basic information about the house, including the rents, and then a lot of pictures.
Okay. And now when you first listed the house, did you immediately get calls from potential applicants?
Yeah, I did. I got a fair amount of traffic, and I chose to have open houses as opposed to trying to schedule showings for all these folks.
Okay.
Because the house is actually about 20 minutes drive from my home where I'm living. And so I didn't want to spend a bunch of time driving back and forth for somebody to walk through for 5 minutes and say, nope.
Yep. Right. Right. So would you just set it up for like a Saturday morning or something?
Yeah, I did. Just the weekends, like Saturdays and Sundays, morning and afternoon.
Okay.
I would alternate on that.
Okay. So would you put in the ad, we're doing an open house at these times, or when people would call you, would you say, okay, well, you can see the house at this time or this time?
It was both, actually.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. So now, did you get the pricing right at the beginning, or did you have to adjust the price?
Well, so I, you know, of course, everybody wants to get as much as they possibly can. And so I thought, well, my holding costs aren't that high. I'm going to go ahead and just test this market. And so I intentionally went high with 875. a month, and it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, 2 full baths. And I think it looks pretty nice on the inside, actually. And so I went with 875 just to see if I could get that. And so I had quite a few tire kickers, but you know, nobody filled out any applications.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably close to a month that I had shown it that way.
Okay.
Maybe a little less than a month.
And then you lowered the price?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, no takers. And so I lowered the price. And then as soon as I lowered the price down to $795, a couple swooped in and took it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, pricing is incredible like that. Like that's maybe a good tip for next time is to price it just a little bit low. Like I always like to price my properties just a little bit below market. And you know, I find I get a lot of showings, I get a lot of applications, and then I can pick the best people. And also, I don't like to have my property sit vacant for a long time. So if I can get a showing, or if I can get a tenant to move in right away, that's better for me. Because once you're selling time, and once that time goes by, you can never get it back. So like every day it sits empty, you're losing money. So I sure. think that's
One of the philosophies that I've kind of adopted here is, you know, I'm trying to make all conservative decisions that allow for mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't buy a house that I thought was going to be questionable in terms of the money that I got out of it. So that, because I know that I'm going to make mistakes.
Sure.
You know, like your suggestion of pricing it a little low and then being able to pick a good renter, you know, it only takes a month or so to make up any difference that I would have had if I would have gotten somebody at 875
right.
as opposed to 795.
Right. Totally.
So, you know, I certainly don't feel bad about these mistakes because I have this padding that allows for that kind of thing. So yeah. On the next one, yeah, I probably won't go so high. I'll probably price it at market or like you're suggesting just a little.
Yeah. And you know, it's hard because I mean, you want to make the most that you can make, but I think you actually, at the end of the day, you actually make more by trying to make less. So it's
right.
kind of interesting, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like you're as much research as you've done, like you're always going to learn more stuff when you're actually doing it. So it's like little stuff like that, you know, I think would have been hard to pick up, you know, maybe someone will pick that up here off this podcast, but I think it's like little things like that, that will in the long run, make you a better investor. Now you're in the process of getting married. You're going to be getting married here in about a month. What did your fiance think about this?
Well, she's never been an entrepreneur or came from a family of that. So that mindset is not something that she's quite familiar with. And so she's been supportive, but she's cautious.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a little concerned about the idea of leverage and
yeah.
you know, the idea that I might end up with a bunch of houses, all of them financed.
Right.
And so she thinks of that as debt, not leverage.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my wife was kind of the same way. I mean, she was a little bit nervous when we first got started, but once she started seeing those rent checks rolling in every month, she came around pretty quickly. So maybe your future wife will be the same way when she sees that it's actually working. Cause I mean, debt is scary for some people. And, you know, I don't know how you can convince somebody to be comfortable with that if they're not. Even though, I mean, we know as investors that there's good debt and there's bad debt and mortgage debt is good debt. So, yeah, that's a big distinction. So, well, that's awesome. Now, so the other bonus of getting married is now you're thinking about renting out her property as the house that she owns and lives in right now. When you guys get married, you're thinking about renting out her house.
Yeah. So we're, you know, we both have two houses or a house each, I should say, that's our primary residence. And so her house is actually right down the street from a junior college. It's literally within walking distance. And then plus we've got the university in this town as well. And so we're considering moving into, and that's the plan we're working towards, is moving into my house because we're living in hers at the moment, rent, and then renting hers out that way.
Awesome. And
that will give, you know, a chance for us to kind of decide what we want to do. I don't see us living in my house, you know, long term. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe in a few years we'll sell it and buy another place, someplace else that awesome. Better suits our needs.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And now, as far as buying more properties that you're going to rehab, is that something that you want to do?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, awesome.
You know, once we kind of get the remodeling done on my house, we'll move into that and probably rent hers out. And so it'll, you know, I'm not really sure if I'm going to try to buy another strictly rental house right away. You know, we just have to kind of wait and see how things play out.
I mean, there's no rush. I mean, take your time. I mean, that's the thing. It's like when you're building out a rental, it's like you hear so many people, especially on this podcast, we've had a lot of people that, you know, they're going out there, they're buying 10 houses in a year and they're building this huge portfolio. But, you know, you don't have to do it that way. I mean, if you pick up maybe one house a year or, you know, whatever you're comfortable with, you can totally make happen. So yeah, don't feel any pressure to get your next place. Well, congratulations, Jerry. I'm really happy. I'm really happy for you. I think this is a great story and I wish you a lot of luck going forward.
Oh yeah. Thanks so much. It's been a lot of fun being here.
Awesome. Well, if you want to reach out to Jerry, I've got his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode 165. For the month of June, I'm experimenting with doing new episodes on Tuesday and Thursday, so we'll be back with a new episode on Tuesday. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.